As the meeting broke up, he asked me to stay behind. I sat on the couch, back to the grandfather clock. He sat in his normal chair, back to the fireplace. The White House photographer, Pete Souza, lingered to record the moment, but the president shooed him away. Within seconds, it was just the two of us. President Obama then leaned forward, forearms on his knees. He started with a long preamble, explaining that he wasn't going to talk to me about any particular case or particular investigation. "I just want to tell you something," he said. I knew how badly Obama had wanted Hillary Clinton to win the White House. He had campaigned tirelessly for her, and by some accounts, harder for her than any other president had for their hoped-for successor. I knew he took the loss hard, as did the entire White House staff. But I respected President Obama and was very open to whatever it was he had to say. "I picked you to be FBI director because of your integrity and your ability," he said. Then he added something that struck me as remarkable. "I want you to know that nothing, nothing has happened in the last year to change my view." He wasn't telling me he agreed with my decisions. He wasn't talking about the decisions. He was saying he understood where they came from. Boy, were those words I needed to hear. I felt a wave of emotion, almost to the verge of tears. President Obama was not an outwardly emotional man in these kinds of meetings, but still I spoke in unusually emotional terms to him. "That means a lot to me, Mr. President. I have hated the last year. The last thing we want is to be involved in an election. I'm just trying to do the right thing." I know," he said. I paused and decided to add something. Maybe it was what I believe a large proportion of the country was feeling. "Mr. President, my wife would kill me if I didn't take the opportunity to thank you and to tell you how much I'm going to miss you." Although I hadn't supported President Obama when he ran for office, I had developed great respect for him as a leader and a person, and it was only at that moment that I felt the full weight of his imminent departure and what it would mean. Unable to help myself, I added, "I dread the next 4 years, but in some ways I feel more pressure to stay now." He said nothing to this. There was no hint of what he thought of the incoming president or the future of the country, though undoubtedly there was much he could have said in both respects. Instead, he patted me on the arm. Then we rose and shook hands, and I walked out of the Oval Office. Soon that same office would have a new and very different occupant. Chapter 12. Trump Tower. And because seeking the truth is what we are all about, the possibility, even the perception, that that quest may be tainted deeply troubles us, as it long has and as it should. Robert M. Gates, Director of Central Intelligence. A small fleet of fully armored SUVs, carrying the directors of National Intelligence, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, made its way toward the tall, shining gold tower in the middle of Manhattan. It was January 6, 2017, 2 weeks before Inauguration Day, and we had all flown up that morning. The NYPD led our cars through the barricade and onto the side street between Madison and Fifth Avenues in Manhattan. We walked in a group, surrounded by our security people, and entered the side street entrance for the Trump Tower residences. The press, in their holding area on Fifth Avenue, couldn't see us arrive, nor could the protesters, in their own holding area not far away. Still, it was quite the scene in the comparatively quiet Trump Tower residence's lobby. We were a two-elevator crowd of leaders and protectors. One elevator discharged a lady going to walk her tiny dog. She and her dog, both wearing expensive coats against a cold Fifth Avenue day, passed through our tight pack of dark suits and armed men. Chief spies holding locked bags with our nation's secrets politely mumbled, "Excuse us." After all the live TV images of job applicants and dignitaries coming and going through the gilded Fifth Avenue lobby as though on a reality TV show, the leaders of our country's biggest intelligence agencies were sneaking in to see the president-elect. We were sneaking in to tell him what Russia had done to try to help elect him. This was to be the third and final briefing session by the leadership of the intelligence community, referred to inside the government as the IC, to describe the classified findings of an intelligence community assessment, ICA, of Russia's actions during the presidential election. At President Obama's direction, analysts from the CIA, NSA, and FBI, coordinated by senior analysts from ODNI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, had spent a month pulling together all sources of information to offer government officials, as well as the incoming Trump administration, a complete picture of the level of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. A watered-down, unclassified version of the ICA had been prepared for public release, but this was the meaty stuff. This was about sharing the most sensitive information, including sources and methods, precisely how we knew what we knew, spelling out in great detail why we had achieved the unusual state of a joint high-confidence opinion that Russia had intervened extensively in an American presidential election. The four agencies had joined in the assessment, which was both stunning and straightforward. Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered an extensive effort to influence the 2016 presidential election. That effort, which came through cyber activity, social media, and Russian state media, had a variety of goals: undermining public faith in the American democratic process, denigrating Hillary Clinton and harming her electability and potential presidency, and helping Donald Trump get elected. Our first briefing on the assessment had occurred the day before, January 5, 2017, with the incumbent of the Oval Office. In front of President Obama, Vice President Biden, and their senior aides, Jim Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, laid out the work that had been done, the conclusions reached, and the basis for those conclusions. The President asked a variety of questions, as did the Vice President. It was at moments like this when I occasionally caught a glimpse of the warm, brotherly, and sometimes exasperating relationship between Barack Obama and Joe Biden, two very different personalities. The pattern was usually the same. President Obama would have a series of exchanges, heading a conversation very clearly and crisply in direction A. Then at some point, Biden would jump in with, "Can I ask something, Mr. President?" Obama would politely agree, but something in his expression suggested he knew full well that for the next 5 or 10 minutes, we would all be heading in direction Z. After listening and patiently waiting, President Obama would then bring the conversation back on course. In this instance, we stayed on track. After an extended discussion on the intelligence assessment, the President asked what the plan was for further briefing.